Okay, thank you. So I'll be presenting today the result from a collaborative research project between our group at McGill University. This was the MSc thesis topic of my student, Marie-Pierre Aubin, and also collaborators from Université Laval, Serum, and AFC in Quebec City. Let me start by saying, if you're looking for a way to gimmick to increase the interest of grad students into your research program, AMP is definitely the right crowd, until they realize that you're dealing with industrial AMP and not recreational AMP. So industrial AMP is cannabis sativa, and in Canada the production has been authorized since 1998. And in order to grow industrial hemp, there's strict guidelines you need to follow, but also you need to grow cultivars that have a THC content lower than 0.3%. Okay? So too bad for the students. And this is regulated, like I said, by Health Canada in Canada. And there's a list of 39 cultivars that you must select from in order to be allowed to grow industrial hemp. And also you must get a license in order to produce it or even to do research on. And this is quite a complex and lengthy process. It involves having everybody who's going to be dealing with the crop to have a background check done by the government. And then you also need to contact your local police force. They must provide a letter in your dossier to make sure that they are aware and they authorize you to grow. So it's kind of a shock when you contact the police in Montreal and tell them I'm going to be growing hemp in Montreal. And you also need to follow very strict guidelines in order to, you know, order the seeds, handle the crop, and how you dispose of it. Okay. And also you must, for most of the 39 cultivars, have a THC quantification done, but there's an exemption for some cultivars. So if we look at the hemp production in Canada, I have the data here from 2008 to 11, but if you continue that graph up to 2014, you see there's still a steady increase in the acreage. Most of the hemp is grown in western provinces of Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba. And the production area in Ontario and Quebec remains very small. The main interest, it links to the previous presentation on tobacco, is in Quebec, is from areas where tobacco used to be grown because they have very similar characteristics in terms of soil that they are best adapted. Because in Quebec, we do not grow tobacco anymore. So yesterday, there was a nice presentation at the Lunch and Learn, or Learn and Lunch, or Eat, something like that, that presented the multiple use for hemp, and I won't go over this, but in Quebec, it's a dual-purpose crop, mainly for both food and fiber. In Quebec, up to this year, another factor that was limiting the acreage in the province was that we didn't have a processing facility for fiber. This changed since this year, so this should promote the growth production of this crop locally. At this point, it was mainly for the food market, the grain that it was grown in eastern Canada. So this being said, the objective of that project was there was limited data on best management practices for this crop in Quebec locally. There's some guidelines for Western Canada, but less for none at the moment for Quebec. So our objective was to establish agronomic guidelines adapted to Quebec conditions. So we conducted a series of three very basic experiments, cultivar selection experiment, a seeding date, and a fertilization, you know, in terms of NPK different rates. So these experiments were conducted in different regions of southern Quebec, so ranging from Montreal in the lower left corner, which has the longest season in Quebec, all the way to La Pocatière, which is one of the areas with the shortest season in southern Quebec, which is on the top right corner. So in terms of general establishment of the crop, we followed the guidelines for Alberta. We had a seeding rate of 43 kilograms of pure live seeds per hectare. And in terms of weeding, there's no registered herbicide at the moment for this crop. But I would say that the window where weeds are competitive with the crop is very small, because it's a crop that is very competitive. And I'll show you pictures and you'll understand why. And in terms of fertilization, for the two experiments that did not involve a fertilization treatment, we followed the guidelines again from Alberta with nitrogen at 110 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare and P and K according to soil analysis result. So since most of you, I suppose, have never seen a field of industrial land, we'll visit, okay, the field in Montreal. So usually the best seeding time would be as early as possible in May, and I'll talk about that when we look at the results of the second experiment. It's best adapted to light soil, and you see here it's a situation where we have an heavier soil with a poor drainage, and in some of those cases the establishment of the crop can be very problematic, and we'll see that when looking at results. Then it kind of grows fairly slowly up to mid-June when you seed in early May, and the crop will be about 15 to 20 centimeters, and the flowering is initiated on the 21st of June when we start to get shorter days. Then it's really in July where it picks up, and depending on the cultivar, because there are some cultivars that are very short, mainly predominantly the grain type, but some others will start to pick up in terms of growth because they are mainly dual purpose or fiber cultivars. And you see that the stems close very quickly, very dense field. And for those cultivars that are fiber or dual purpose, you can see Marie-Pierre is quite short, but still you can see it's 7 to 8 feet tall. It can reach in a stem that is quite thick. Then in August, we have the first seeds that mature, and this is a problem with some cultivars. We have a fair amount of shattering. You can see in that picture, here you have some seeds that are already ripe and they fall, and at the same time on the plants, you have some seeds that are still forming. So we haven't quantified, but a fair amount of the yield, the potential yield, is lost to shattering and bird damage. Birds love ants. So harvesting occurs at the end of August or early September, depending on the cultivar. And usually it's harvested when the lower leaves have dropped and you see the inflorescence, most of the seeds are ripe. So let's look at the result from the first experiment where we look at different cultivars among the list approved in Canada. And so we have 39 cultivars that are approved for growth by Health Canada, but I would say from my experience, it's very difficult to find sources for some of those. So initially, we wanted to test as many as possible of those 39, but it proved to be difficult. So the first year, in 2012, we evaluated 10 cultivars, and in 2013, one of those cultivars was no longer available, so we switched it for another one. So in total, we evaluated 11 cultivars. That a range of characteristics in terms of sexual types. Usually the plant is dioecious with male and female plants, but some are not. So we had a range of these types, also range in terms of maturity and purpose, either for grain or dual purpose, both fiber and grain. So this is an overview of the results we got. We conducted this experiment in a total of 7 environments, 3 in 2012 and 4 in 2013. I'd like to point out your attention to the fourth line where we're looking at the density, so in plants per meter square, and you can see here that there's a huge range, ranging from a total stem failure to a very good establishment. This points out that in some specific environments, some particular cultivars totally failed to establish. Okay? So because of that, we had a very large range in terms of seed and stem yield, and but the yields range for the average of seed yield was at 1,200 kilograms dry matter per hectare, and stem yield was at 3,000 on average. So this compares favorably in terms of seed for compared to what are the yields in Western Canada. We also characterized the composition of the seeds and the stems. We had less differences between cultivars in terms of seed and in particular in stem characteristic. The seeds had about, on average, 23% crude protein and 30% oil, and again, this compares to what is found in the literature in the rest of Canada. And same thing for stems, with about 75% fiber, the bulk of this was cellulose, with very limited differences in terms of stem quality among the different entries and across environment. So here we are looking at, I took a subset of the data, and out of the 7 environments, I took the 3 in Saint-Anne, which is located on the island of Montreal. And so we had 2 soil types or seeding date in 2012 and 1 in 2013. And I'll focus on was that the pointer, but I don't know. Anyway. Oh yeah, it works. So you're looking at Elisa here, and you can see a huge variation ranging from 200 kilograms per hectare to 2200. So huge, huge fluctuation depending on productivity. We're looking at seed yield depending on the environment. And if we're looking at one particular cultivar across the seven environments, again, you can see huge variation between the different sites. So it's big influence on of the environment and crop performance. And the same type of response was observed for the stem yield. And so what I did here is I plotted the dry matter, average dry matter yields across all the environments, and I plotted that against the coefficient of variation to identify the best performing individuals. And using this graphical representation, you will have, in this quadrant, you will have the best cultivar because they have the highest yield, and also they have the highest stability across the environment. And we can see here that we have four of those cultivars, including Anka, Jutta, and Ferrimont, and this is for seed yield. And if you're looking at the same graphical representation for stem, we again have those three cultivars. So this leads that across those environments, probably the best choice will be one of those three cultivars because they have the highest stability across environment, and also they produce reasonable seed and stem yield. So this leads to the second experiment where we're looking at the seeding date. So we did that with two cultivars, CRS1 and Anka, and we had three seeding dates, early May, mid-May, and late May. And here we can see very clearly that the earlier seeding will lead to the highest yield. And this is true for the seed and the stem yield. And this is a problem because I told you you need to get a license to produce this crop, and often, although you make the application, if you're a good boy, right, you do it as soon as possible, do it before Christmas, but often you get your license only in late May or even all the way to early June. So you see that the producer will not be able to maximize his or her yield in that case. And then the last experiment, we look at the response to NPK. So again, the same two cultivars, we had the 5 fertilization rate for these three elements. And we can see a very strong response, inner response, all the way up to 200 kilos, so we didn't reach a plateau for both seed and stem yield. So in conclusion, we had the yields of seeds and stems are highly variable. The cultivars Anka, Jutta, and Ferrimont have the greatest potential as for dual purpose use. The early seeding results in greater seed and stem yield. However, the license, is an issue here. And there's a strong response to N and a lack of response to P and K, which I forgot to mention before. So I'd like to acknowledge our collaborators and also funding from the Ministry of Agriculture of Quebec. So if I have time for a question.
Thank you, Philippe. Yeah, I think we have time for at least one.
Okay,
one
yeah.
Question.
What is the frost sensitivity in the seedling?
Well, good question. We were lucky not to experience any frost with the seeding, because the seeding, you have to realize, for our cultivar trial, which was the most extensive, was seeded in most cases, in most environment, was seeded in early June, so it was not an issue. And we didn't face that with the seeding date experiment. So I wouldn't be able to comment on that. Yeah?
How do you deal with the plant? Like if you plant it,
It's a good question, because those that dioecious, how we deal with the proportion. Usually we quantify the proportion, I don't remember, but the male plants being, like in humans, quite useless, right? They tend to disappear quite fast, okay? So even if you have I don't remember offhand, the proportion of males, but it's usually a small proportion, and they die back very quickly. Once they've done their job, they're gone, and they're very small, very short compared to the female plants. So it doesn't affect really much, because the female plants will fill up the space, okay?
You better keep going here a bit.
Okay.
It's going to be quicker.
Yeah, how much fiber can you handle in the stem before it starts becoming crumbling?
That's a very good question about the fiber. It's an issue. Actually, what we did, we harvested all the plants, because when the first time we harvested directly with the combine, and I started to hear some weird noise, so I said, whoa, I don't want to pay to repair the combine. So we did the threshing at the station by hand, and we fed it very slowly. It is an issue for the fiber, because the fiber is very, very strong, and it's an issue, breakage of equipment. Anyway,
excellent.
Thank you.
Interesting talk.
Thanks.
Alrighty, our next speaker.